Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Early this evening, we broadcast a report of an invisible man. The report has now been confirmed.
Listen, are you there?
It appears that an unknown man, by scientific means, has made himself invisible. He has attacked and killed a police inspector and is now at large.
We'll begin with a reign of terror. A few murders here and there. Murders of great men, murders of little men. But just to show we make no distinction, we might even break a train or two.
We've got a terrible responsibility. He's mad and he's invisible. He may be standing beside us now.
You're crazy to know who I am, aren't you? All right, I'll show you who I am and what I am.
Scientists around the world are pursuing invisibility, with the main goal being the ultimate in covert operations for the military.
It's like something out of Harry Potter, an invisibility cloak that makes people and objects disappear from view, able to hide in plain sight. Some researchers say this supernatural fantasy may soon become a reality. They announced this week that they are a step closer to creating a real invisibility cloak.
I'll tell you what I think of your invisible man. It's a hoax.
Don't you see what it means? Power. Power to walk into the gold vaults of the nations, into the secrets of kings. Power to make multitudes run squealing in terror at the touch of my little invisible finger.
He's invisible. That's what's the matter with him. If he gets the rest of them clothes off, we'll never catch him in 1,000 years.
Hello and welcome to Science-ish. I'm Rick Edwards, joined as ever by Dr. Michael Brooks.
Hello.
Now, before we get into what we're actually going to be talking about, we did some maths and we think that this is... Drum roll, please. Don't. I mean, obviously don't do it. We'll just do it in post or something. Yeah. This is the 100th episode!
Oh. That's mad.
100 episodes. If do you remember we used to do special?
Oh yeah. So we're counting little... those, are we?
Yeah, but still, it's like 80 without them. But
yeah,
100 episodes.
100 episodes, including the specialist shorter ones.
Yeah, but you don't need.
They're still very good.
Don't,
though.
Don't need the.
They're still very good. So what are we doing for the 100th episode?
It's a good one. It's not an easy one, but it's a good one.
Okay.
We're going to be looking at the H.G. Wells classic, The Invisible Man.
Oh.
Hmm.
Book or film?
I'm thinking the book. But I think you would say H.G. Wells about the film adaptations as well, probably.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm thinking the book. There's a new version of The Invisible Man, which I think is out quite soon.
Is somebody leaking our schedules? We seem to be having somebody on our coattails the whole time.
Yeah, you think the film company is just monitoring our output?
Yeah, yeah. I'm worried. I think we're going to need to go through the production staff and find out, you know, who's actually leaking this stuff.
Mm. Anyway, we're doing the book.
Right.
The book came out in, I'm sure you remember, 1897. it's good stuff, actually.
I read it as a child. I remember reading it.
As I told you, I think I read the abridged version.
The Lady Bird.
Abridged, I genuinely think it was the Lady Bird version.
I love it that they brought out a Lady Bird version of The Invisible Man.
Because it's not suitable for kids. Like, it's pretty... So there's a scientist called Griffin. He figures out how to become invisible. Fine.
Right.
And so he wraps his head in bandages and then puts the pair of goggles on and a fake nose. That's the sort of iconic Invisible Man image. So there's a film made in like the 30s or 40s, wasn't there?
Which I
think I have seen bits of, but I can't remember. So he's made himself invisible. Great. But then he wants to reverse the invisibility process because actually it's a bit of a nightmare, but he can't. And then he just sort of goes mad. But he's already, like, from the get-go, like, he's not a good guy.
Right. He's one of those scientists, is he?
Yeah, exactly. And he basically becomes a criminal, and he can get away with quite a lot because he's invisible. But also he gets betrayed by the invisibility because there's things like you can just see the food in his digestive tract and stuff.
He needs to make invisible food first, doesn't he?
Yeah, he should
have
done
that. And then eat
that. Yeah, but he wasn't doing that. I mean, it's great. It's great stuff.
I kind of feel like I don't need to ask what our big question is going to be.
No, it's not a surprising question. The question is, will we ever be able to turn invisible?
Obviously. Yeah. What else are you going to ask?
Yeah, it's a good question.
So who's going to help us figure that out?
Well, this is huge. And I know we always say it's huge, but genuinely, this is huge. We've got Professor Sir John Pendry. You heard. Professor Sir. That's a big hitter, isn't it?
That's huge. And
he's a theoretical physicist at Imperial College. And alongside a team at Duke University, he's widely credited with developing the first practical invisibility cloak back in 2006.
Is he our first knight?
Yes, he must be our first knight. And invisible knight.
We had Steve Cowley on the Ice Age episode. Do you remember? Was it Ice Age? Oh, no, it was Chain Reaction.
Steve Cowley was on Fusion.
Yeah, Chain Reaction.
Yeah, because he mugged him off constantly.
The day the podcast came out, he got knighted.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, maybe John Pendry will have his taken away after this. We give, we take. But genuinely, this guy is... He's the absolute daddy.
Right.
There's no one better to talk to.
Brilliant. So where do we start?
Well, first of all, we wanted to ask him why invisibility is so tricky.
Invisibility is about more than just not seeing something. You can make something black and then you don't see it. Of course, it reflects no light. And that's conventional stealth. You might paint an aircraft so that it's black to radar. But the greater challenge is to make an object such that you're not aware that it's there, because a black object can still be detected through its shadow. And that is the real challenge. How can you remove the shadow?
It's easy, really, if you're clever. A few chemicals mixed together, that's all. And flesh and blood and bone just fade away. A little of this injected under the skin of the arm every day for a month. An invisible man can rule the world.
What you have to do is to make light steer around the invisible object, and then, crucially, on the other side, return to the trajectory that it was on in the first place, like a skier doing a shalom round a tree, so that you continue in the same straight line. And then somebody looking at that object wouldn't see the object, because the light getting into their eyes would be going in the straight line, and you'd see what was behind the object. That's easily stated, but persuading light to do that is a very tricky challenge.
He meddled in things men should leave alone.
What do you mean?
He worked in secret. He kept a lot of stuff locked in a big cupboard in his laboratory. He never opened that cupboard until he'd barred the door and drawn them blinds. Straightforward scientists have no need for barred doors and drawn blinds.
I mean, the first thing to pick up on, I'm sure, well, I imagine we want to say the same thing. Go on, what's your question?
What's a shalom?
Yes, same as mine, I think.
Does he mean slalom?
I think he must mean slalom.
Right.
Because what he's talking about, I think, is that's what you want light to be doing.
Yeah.
Just sort of approaching an object and then just going around the outside and then coming back to exactly the same path it was on. And therefore, you wouldn't be able to, like water flowing around a rock.
Yeah, exactly.
You wouldn't be able to see it. And to be fair, as Professor Sir John points out, it's quite easy to state. It's quite hard to do.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And I like the dismissal of the kind of conventional stealth technology.
He spat out conventional stealth, didn't he? He could not be less interested in conventional stealth.
Yeah, yeah. So, I remember reading the book, as I said, but I don't remember what's actually
Lady Bird?
No, full thing.
Very good.
Yeah, I was a precocious child. Mm. And I've no idea whether the book tells us how the Invisible Man did his invisibility.
Yeah, I think Wells was quite sort of scientifically well-informed and wanted to do something plausible-ish. So there was an earlier book, I can't remember what it was called actually, like 20 years earlier or something, where a guy had talked about invisibility and you just make everything transparent and then you just be able to see straight through and that's fine. But that doesn't quite cut it actually, because if you have a transparent, like a glass is transparent, but I can still see it.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is refraction. And this is like, everyone remember this from school, I think. When light travels from one medium to another medium, so let's say air into glass, it travels at a slightly different speed. Like a more dense medium, it travels more slowly. And as it enters, it changes its direction. And as soon as that happens, it means you start to be able to see the thing. So what you really want is for the light to just pass straight through without it getting deviated, scattered, or reflected.
Yeah, okay. Yeah? Right, right.
So what you need is for the refractive index of both to be the same. So the refractive index of air is 1.
Yeah.
So what you need is for the refractive index of whatever it is that you, that let's say you're trying to make you invisible, you want your refractive index, the refractive index of all your tissue, to be 1 as well.
Yes,
and then
I
there
do.
Would be no refraction. So H.G. Wells, he sort of knows you probably can't do it, but he says he's discovered some sort of, he calls it ethereal vibration. Bear in mind, this is all around the time that X-rays were first being discovered. And so he was kind of borrowing a bit from that.
Yeah.
So you use this ethereal vibration and then you're able to make materials have the same refractive index
nice.
As air. Therefore, it can just pass straight through.
I think that's a fair old stab.
Well, it's not bad. I mean, the sort of the physics of it is bang on. It's
yeah.
just we have no idea how you would actually achieve it.
Right, right.
But the science is good.
All right.
Science is solid.
I began 5 years ago in secret, working all night, every night, right into the dawn. 1,000 experiments, 1,000 failures, and then, at last, the great wonderful day. But Griffin, it's ghastly. The great wonderful day. The last little mixture of drugs. But why? Why do it, Griffin? Just a scientific experiment at first. But there's more to it than that, Kemp. The drugs I took seemed to light up my brain. Suddenly, I realized the power I held. The power to rule, to make the world grovel at my feet.
I mean, we don't know how to do it. Presumably, evolution's had a bit of a go at this.
Oh, yeah. So, there's a couple of definitions to think about first. So, we really want invisibility, as in you cannot see the thing. You can see what's behind the thing. You can see what's to the side of the thing. You just can't see the thing.
Right.
As opposed to camouflage, which is obviously quite similar, but not really what we're after here.
Yeah, I mean, it's like conventional stealth.
It's a bit like conventional stealth. Yeah.
Who gives a fuck?
Yeah, so you can keep your camouflage, even though some animals are amazing at conventional camouflage. but transparency has evolved a number of times independently in different creatures. The issue with being transparent is you can't make your whole body transparent. Now, which bit of your body can you not make transparent, sort of by definition? This is a test for you.
Bone?
No.
Eyes?
Eyes. Why not?
Because they've got to detect the light, haven't they?
Yeah, they
the whole
have,
point
they
is to absorb the light.
Absorb the light.
Yeah.
So
did I pass that test?
So you did, yeah. I mean,
after bones.
After bones, yeah. And if I take your first answer, no. But second answer, good. Yeah, so that was a thing that Wells could never get around in The Invisible Man. He just had to sort of ignore it. He knew that the eyes would be an issue.
Yeah.
But it's going to ruin your story if you guys blind as well.
You don't want to worry about that.
Yeah. But if you are totally, you would be blind if you were totally invisible.
That's interesting, isn't it? I'd never really thought about that.
Yeah. Yeah, because you otherwise light is being absorbed and that immediately gives away your position.
Yeah. Good.
But also the digestive system is, again, it's the old invisible food. Like if you've eaten something and it isn't invisible, unlucky. Oh, sorry, not invisible, if it isn't transparent.
Yeah.
But there's various, like there's some nice ways of getting around that. So there's some mollusks, transparent mollusks that have a kind of like a mirror near the, I think it's either behind the eyes or adjacent to the eyes or something, which means that light reflects off it and it's effectively reflecting back the image of the open sea. So it kind of camouflages it quite nicely.
I mean, it's conventional stealth technology, but
it's conventional stealth. But, you know, we're talking about a transparent mollusk here. I mean, it's coming up some nice stuff. And then there's an octopus called the glass octopus. Any idea why? It doesn't matter. And its eyes are very elongated, which means that its peripheral vision isn't great, but it minimises the shadow that it casts below. Because that's the other issue, that if you have any opaque bits, which they do, then they will cast shadows, which give away your position. But this shape means that it's slightly less. It's quite clever.
Yeah. I mean, Evolution's quite impressive, isn't it?
Evolution's absolutely amazing. I mean, I love it. There's glass squids.
Oh, of course there are.
Which is a whole family. they've got these big eyes, which are opaque. They're casting a shadow. That's no good to them. But they can camouflage them with... It's a bit similar to the mirror, but a bit more advanced. So they have photophores underneath the eyes that produce light. And it's this thing called counter-illumination. So it looks a bit like the light that will just be filtering down from above. I mean, it only works from some angles.
Yeah.
And it could actually really stitch you up. So from some angles, it's great because... You're just totally invisible. From other angles,
it's like a torch beam.
Sort of got a torch beam. And Predator's like, but they sort of somehow these photophores can match the amount of light coming from every direction. So it's sort of like it's almost like an omnidirectional
crazy
cloaking device. Very nice.
Very good.
Very, very nice.
Well done.
So hyperids. That are little crustaceans that are sort of, I don't know, like a bit like a shrimp. And they are extraordinary because they are sort of transparent, but they appear to be using, I'm going to say using, they've evolved a type of nanotechnology that is interfering with the light. So it's kind of cloaking them.
Whoa.
It's absolutely insane. So they've got these tiny little nano-sized protuberances that are minimizing light scattering. It's really spicy. And they I read that they think that these little protuberances might actually be bacteria. I mean, you can't.
Now that would be brilliant.
Yeah. Hard to get your head around. But they're doing something very nice. And this is really just a sort of thing where I think you need to go on, type sea sapphires into YouTube. So these are these tiny little flat oval-ish creatures, and they go from kind of being almost like iridescent, like really, hence the sea sapphire name, like really like beautiful, stunning sort of glowing little thing, and then it will just move a little bit, sort of almost like looks in the current, and just go invisible. And there's a fantastic YouTube, just like 2 minute clip of it, and your eyes are just like, I don't understand what's happening here, and it's just that at 45 degrees, so when light hits them at 45 degrees, they sort of become invisible.
Love it.
Really spicy.
Yeah. Love it.
But then equally, I mean, it's not great camouflage because then they move a few degrees and they're
how do you know where the 45 degrees sweet spot is?
Yeah, I mean, that I think...
It's the idea that you just keep disappearing and then you move away.
I suppose
and, like, you reappear somewhere else, don't you?
Yeah, I suppose if you keep disappearing, it's quite off-putting for a predator. I mean, it's not perfect, but it's impressive.
Yeah.
You'll enjoy it when you have a look
at it. Okay, I will do. So you said that Professor Sir John Pendry invented an invisibility cloak like 15 years ago. What's that about?
So this is where we get on to metamaterials and transformation optics, and I'll obviously let Professor Sir John explain.
In our research, which is sometimes very technical, we had two things that we wanted to talk about. One was a new class of materials called metamaterials, and another was a theoretical concept called transformation optics, which is a way of, if you want to distort the path of light, it will tell you what materials you need. And these, on the face of it, sounded rather dry, and we wanted to sell them to a wider audience to make them aware that these are important concepts. So racking our brains as to how we could do this, we realized these were ideal tools for making something invisible. And we also realized that might make people sit up and listen to us. And it did.
Have you ever wished you could disappear? It is a power that used to belong only to superheroes, wizards, and evil villains. But scientists really are working on ways to make you invisible, too.
They created this material made up of circuits and copper that deflects waves around it.
Microwave absorber.
But for now, it's only invisible to microwaves, not the light spectrum that we see.
These microwaves can be routed around the object and then restored on the other side, so it's as if they had traveled through free space.
And scientists say now, in theory, it is possible to do this with visible light waves as well, someday.
Michelle, are you there?
For all those times when you absolutely, positively have to be Michelle. Invisible.
Michelle?
Normally, when you want to alter the property of a material, you change its chemistry. When you're making some nice polished glass that wants to shine when you put light on it, you add some lead to it to make it more refracting. But there's another way of altering how a material appears to light, and that's through its internal microstructure. I'll give you an example of that. One of the best mirrors possible is polished silver. But you may have seen silver in another form. Do you remember the old black and white photographic negatives? The black in them is silver, but in a different form. And the silver has been ground up into very, very tiny nanoparticles. And because of this changed structure, it goes from being highly reflecting to highly absorbing. And that's the power of structure.
What is it? A list of chemicals. And the last on the list is monocaine.
I never heard of it.
You wouldn't, Kemp. It's never used now. It's a drug that's made from a flower that's grown in India. It draws color from everything it touches. Years ago, they tried it for bleaching cloth. They gave it up because it destroyed the material.
Metamaterials have to have a structure that is smaller than the wavelength of light. And for visible light, that's pretty small. It's less than a micron. So they're expensive to engineer. And by and large, you only do it when you have some expensive piece of kit that you're very keen to make.
That doesn't sound very terrible.
Yes, I know, but it does something else, Kemp. It was tried out on some poor animal, a dog, I believe. It was injected under the skin, and it turned the dog dead white, like a marble statue.
Isn't that so?
Yes, and it also sent it raving mad.
You surely don't think?
I only pray to God the Griffin hasn't been meddling with this ghastly stuff.
So, what exactly is going on with metamaterials?
So, metamaterials is a really exciting bit of engineering. It's pretty new. I mean, you could probably argue that Professor John is he founded it.
Oh, right. That is recent then, yeah.
I mean, people had talked about, so there's a guy in the 60s who talked about, could you create a substance that had a negative refractive index, i.e. would sort of flip what you saw. So instead of, so if you had your, like straw in a glass, yeah. And because of refraction, you see it appears that the straw is bent.
Yeah.
Classic. But if that water had a negative refractive index, then it would flip the image. So the straw would not only appear to be at an angle, it would be broken. It would appear that it started on the other side of the glass.
Oh, nice.
And then,
right,
and then come across the other way.
Yeah.
So it's all sort of theoretical.
Yeah.
And we don't know how to do that. However, there's this idea in transformation optics that if you can control the paths of light rays by just guiding them along a path rather than letting them go along the path that they would normally take, then you might be able to start creating these invisibility effects. In essence, it's working on the tiniest, tiniest scales. So you are getting light rays passed almost like step by step from one little component to another little component to another little component and then working around this path and then rejoining so they're on the same path as they were when they first approached this cloaking device.
Yeah.
That's the sort of principle of it.
Okay.
So I think it was Professor John who wrote some sort of theory on this in the 90s. And then at Duke University in North Carolina, they figured out actually how to make a metamaterial. And it's sort of like this little array on like a circuit board with these tiny little loops, metal loops and rings are etched. And they call them sort of meta atoms. That's the scale we're thinking about. So they have to be at the same size as the wavelength of light that they're manipulating. So this is, we are talking tenths of a micrometer,
okay.
Like tiny.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're expensive. It's really expensive to make this stuff because it's such fine detail. And they were able to make in 2006 a microwave invisibility shield.
Okay.
So you could hide an object inside this sort of like 10 rings of metamaterial. And it was invisible to microwaves.
But this is a very tiny object, presumably.
This is a tiny object.
Okay.
The reason that it's easier to do it with microwaves is because they have a longer wavelength. Now, when we say light...
We're talking about the whole spectrum.
Light is the whole is all of electromagnetic radiation. Obviously, what we're really interested in is visible light, so something that would be invisible to our eyes.
Yeah.
The microwave invisibility shield is great, but to look at, it's like, I can still see it. Okay, fine. but longer wavelength, easier therefore to make that metamaterial.
I mean, some might say that's underwhelming, but this is very early days, right? I mean, you know, we start with microwaves, but I mean, have we got anywhere with shielding from visible light?
Yeah, we have. So there's a guy called Xuang Zhang who's made this ultra-thin invisibility cloak. I would say... slightly moderate your excitement here. Again, it ain't big. But what it does effectively is it sits over the top of like a tiny object that you want to cloak, and it interferes with the light reflection in such a way that it seems like the light is just hitting a perfect mirror.
Okay.
So it preserves the frequency and the phase of the light. You can't see the cloak, you can't see the object. It just appears like a mirror. So that's quite cool. And this is using these tiny little like gold antennas, like tiny.
I'm trying to envisage that. That's not really cloaking as such, is it? As just perfect reflection, no matter what the shape of the surface is. Is that right?
But that is cloak because you've got something behind it.
Oh, I suppose.
That you can't.
Yeah.
So the cloak is over the top of the object that you're trying to...
You're not looking at it saying it looks the same as the background, is my point.
Ah, no. But what you could do is almost like... tune these gold antennas so that you could make the reflected light look like anything you wanted.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
Which is so, like the background of the objects would be the sensible thing, like the floor or the wall or whatever. But you could also maybe make it look like something entirely different. And you won't be particularly surprised to hear which industrial complex is interested in that.
I imagine it might be a military one.
It's the military, because the military are like, hold on a minute, can we drape one of these cloaks over a tank and make it look like a little old lady on a tricycle? And this hasn't been done, but in theory, you might be able to. And it kind of like this reflection trick works from any angle, so doesn't have to be a certain shape. So I think the only thing is it has to be stationary.
Right, okay.
I think. But still, not bad.
It's not bad, no.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just unfortunate that it's all really, really small stuff, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So, I mean, a lot of it is just to do with the expense of it.
But if I had enough money, would I be able to cover this fine frame with a cloak?
You'd need a lot of money for that frame.
A lot of cloak.
I don't know is the answer. There's a bit of skepticism about this stuff and the applications in the real world and the sort of achievable sizes.
Okay.
But this guy, Zhang, definitely thinks that it could be scaled up. No reason it couldn't be scaled up. It's just a phenomenal cost implication.
The problem with the invisibility cloak is that to work well, it has to have a finite thickness. So I say to people that it's not Harry Potter's cloak, it's more like Harry Potter's shed. So yes, we could probably build a shed in which you could hide from somebody, but not a cloak that would flap about. The flapping about a bit is almost impossible to achieve.
There are one or two things you must understand, Kemp. I must always remain in hiding for an hour after meals. The food is visible inside me until it is digested. You must always be near at hand to wipe off my feet. Even dirt between my fingernails would give me away. It is difficult at first to walk downstairs. We are so accustomed to watching our feet, but these are trivial difficulties. We shall find ways of defeating everything.
Another extension has been into two further areas. You don't normally think of a magnetic field as light, but it is actually a component of light. And this theory of ours was so powerful that you can actually hide things from magnetic fields, which might sometimes be useful. And groups in Harvard have been designing a magnetic cloak. Another area which is coming to prominence in the last 5 or 10 years is acoustics. Of course, there are many instances where you might want to shield things from sound and indeed not make an object invisible, but make the sound itself invisible. And metamaterials have been quite helpful in devising acoustic shields and so on. And finally, one of my postdocs, who's one of the most imaginative guys I've ever come across, wants to cloak buildings from earthquakes. But that's another story.
Yeah, I'd want to hear the story. Yeah,
I wanted to hear the story, but I wonder if the story is being patented right now and maybe turning up in San Francisco as a very lucrative business venture.
So I think that the vague principle of it is that you drill holes and then put a softer material sort of around the perimeter of your building, and then the sound waves. Again, it's working in exactly the same way as these metamaterial cloaks, but obviously we're talking about wavelengths much, much longer. Like seismic waves, like sound waves.
Yeah.
And then the sound just kind of gets moved around your building and then passes on off past it.
It's a big idea, isn't it?
It's a great idea.
Yeah, I like it.
I
don't know what happens when the sort of mud beneath and soil beneath your building gets liquefied, though. I mean, because at some point down...
Only one way to find out.
Yeah.
Let's get drilling. Also, I'm not quite sure what happens when you've got loads of buildings that have all got this and they're all sort of like trying to... You get sort of basically get like a traffic jam of sound.
Basically, when your neighbours have got this, you know it's time to move, don't you?
Yeah. There is a building somewhere that hasn't been able to afford this protection and it is getting fucked.
So... I don't really want a Harry Potter shed.
No, but if that's all that's available, you take it.
I want the cloak, and it's not looking like that.
Just stand still.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's motion is the problem, isn't it?
It's part of the problem, yeah. So, well, first of all, there's a difference between a sort of passive cloak, so something that just suppresses light scattering without you having to input any energy at all. And they think for visible frequencies, for anything like really big, it's not going to be possible.
Okay.
But basically, just the larger the object, the harder it is to hide. That kind of makes sense.
Nothing comes for free.
And the shorter the wavelength, the harder as well, because in terms of just making those metamaterials, it's just really difficult. But if you're prepared to use, sort of an active cloak, so something where you are putting energy in, then those limitations might not apply. But again, this stuff is really young. It's a young science. We're sort of working it out.
Yeah.
And there's also, metamaterials, people, it's funny that invisibility is not the aim of most of these researchers. It's just like...
What?
What
are they wasting their time on?
Like John said, like they were just looking for a way to sort of get a bit of attention on the and they were like, well, this will grab people.
It's not actually an invisibility project.
Not really. Like, obviously, the military are pumped for that.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
They're looking at sort of like you could maybe make better solar panels. So, for example, if you had a metamaterial that enabled you just to absorb the most efficient wavelength of light solar panel and then reflect everything else away, and then you could sort of process that as heat or whatever, then you're maximizing efficiency.
Yeah.
So like something like that, or like satellite communications, I think they're looking at it, data processing. There's all sorts of applications out there not to do with invisibility.
Fine.
Or not directly anyway.
Fine.
In the way that we think of it. Sorry.
Right.
Sorry.
Okay. I mean, I feel slightly missold here, but I suppose he did say up front, that this isn't just about that.
Yeah, he did.
All right. So let's go back to the military, though, because I bet they're not saying, oh, could you give us better solar panels?
No,
a lot of money going into this?
There's a thing called the Hyperstealth Invisibility Cloak.
Oh, hello.
And again, worth getting yourself on YouTube and having a look at some of the demonstrations of it. It's It's really cool. It is really. There's no other way of putting it. And so it's just like a material that this guy in Canada has developed. And the first thing that they did with this material is literally just whacked it onto what do you call it? Well, it's like a shield. You know, like riot police go in and they've got the little hand and say, just whacked it onto that. And you hold it up in front of you. And if you hold it up at a certain distance and the person is standing, you can't see them, basically.
No.
It's really weird. And there's a lovely demonstration where they have two bits of this material just stood up on a desk, and then they hide various things behind it, and they kind of the camera comes up and over the top, and you're like, "Oh wow, didn't realize that was there."
Because
you can see you can just see the background. It's not perfect, like it's not. You can see that something's going on. It looks what it looks most like is the cloaking that the Predator has. Where you can sort of see something's
fuzzy,
going on.
Something's not quite right.
But also you can't really see it, so it's quite good. It's that sort of vibe. It uses these lenticular lenses, these tiny little lenses all arranged, and it kind of it splits the light, so the light is refracted off in opposite directions, and so you end up with a kind of dead spot in the middle of the two refracted rays of light.
Yeah.
And so what you see is a sort of elongated version of the background filling in all of the details. So there's some backgrounds where that wouldn't work so well, but there's obviously some backgrounds where it works really nicely. So if you've just got like a blank wall and a skirting board, then that will just fill in really nicely.
Yeah.
You won't be able to see the gap. Now that's quite cool, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, I'd buy that.
It's not available for purchase currently.
God damn it. All right, so is it actually a power that we want to have outside of military uses?
Invisibility is one of those things that has been spoken about in myth and stuff for donkey's years. And invisibility always comes down to the same things, which are getting money for yourself, getting sex for yourself, and then killing other people. that seems to be, and all the way through. So it's kind of...
Are we seeing the dark side of Professor Sir John Pendry here?
Yeah, I don't think Professor Sir John is that interested in any of those things, but I think everyone else probably is.
Oh, right, okay.
I want to help you. Why did you do this?
For you, Flora. I wanted to do something tremendous. To achieve what men of science have dreamt of since the world began. To gain wealth and fame and honor, to write my name above the greatest scientists of all time. I had nothing to offer you, Flora. I was just a poor, struggling chemist. I shall offer my secret to the world with all its terrible power. The nations of the world will bid for it, thousands, millions. The nation that wins my secret can sweep the world with invisible armies.
Run down the question then. Will we ever be able to turn invisible?
I don't think we will.
Well, we definitely not.
There's let's not say definitely not.
I mean that humans
without
are not going
technology.
To be. Yeah, there's way that you're going to do H.G. Wells style invisibility. We're not going to be able to change our refractive index to one.
No.
is not going to be possible. No. There are certainly forms of invisibility cloaking out there that are being developed for various reasons, not all of them terrible, but some of them potentially quite terrible.
Most of them terrible.
But at the minute, I think we have to take what Professor Sir John said, which is the best you can hope for is an invisibility shed.
If that's all I can get, I'm taking it still.
Of course you are. This is actually our last episode for a little while because I am off to get a new knee. Which I'm not very excited about.
I'm quite excited about it.
Not a whole new knee. I'm just having a bit of it reconstructed. And I feel a bit sick about it.
Yeah, you're not happy about it, are you?
No.
At all?
No, not at all. Why would I be happy?
I don't know. Because of the potential that you'll have a new knee and you'll be like new lease of life.
Super knee.
You'll be springing out of the house saying, "Hello, world, I've got a new knee."
Yeah. No.
Feeling good. I'm no longer limping all the time.
I'm off to my shed.
Where is it? Oh, no, I've lost my...
Yeah, you'd have to do a sort of breadcrumbs trail.
You can see the path that I laid to the secret shed. It just ends at nothing.
Hello,
Science-ish is a Radio Wolfgang production presented by me, Rick Edwards, and Dr. Michael Brooks. It was produced by Eli Block. The executive producer was Harry Watson. Special thanks to Professor Sir John Pendry. If you enjoy Science-ish, please just spread the word. If there's any films or books you think we should cover, get in touch on Twitter at science_ish. Obviously, do not suggest any plays. But it must be, hang on, I do know this.
I mean, that natural sciences degree was a long time ago, wasn't it?
It really was, actually. God, that's terrible, isn't it? How can I not remember that? You Google it. I'll carry on talking.
Yeah.